Okay, how's that? We're on. Thank you. Yes, welcome to the ISP and connectivity providers session at this ICANN meeting. There will be a sheet circulating round. If you could add your details for the record, I would appreciate that. We'll do a quick round robin of who's here, and then we'll switch over to the bridge to see who's on the bridge as well. The format this meeting is taking is a little bit different because we have some internal ISP discussions to add on at the end. So the format is that from now until 4 o'clock, it will be an open meeting and we'll work through this agenda. From 4 o'clock to 4:30, it will be a closed members-only meeting for internal ISP business. So, to get things rolling, I'm Tony Holmes. I currently chair the ISP constituency, and I'm here representing BT. Mikey.
I'm Mikey O'Connor, also a member of the ISPCP, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Internet Regional Exchange.
I'm Osvaldo Novoa. I'm representative of Uruguay, and I'm also a member of the GNSO Council.
My name is Jeroen Tekelenburg. I'm from the Dutch ISP Auxilium.
My name is Raoul Werger. I'm also from the Dutch ISP Auxilium.
My name is Olivier Muron, and I'm with France Telecom.
Alain Bidron, France Telecom.
My name is Toshi Tateishi from Japan ISPs Association.
Akino Maimura from JPNIC, Japan Network Information Center.
Dan Alexander, Comcast Cable.
Hi, I'm Eduardo Parajo from CGI-BR and also Brazilian ISP Association.
Jamie Wagner from Internet Sul Brazil.
Wolfgang Knoben, I'm on the council, GNSO Council, as vice chair, and I'm representing Deutsche Telekom.
Thank you, Mikey. Could we go to the call? Who is on the bridge?
Is there anybody on the bridge that would like to announce themselves?
Hi, Jen Taylor with BT.
Thanks a lot. Anybody else?
Welcome, Jen. Okay, there are some other people on the bridge, but obviously not going to announce themselves. Could I just mention, for those of you who aren't members of the constituency, if you could leave your business cards here, that would be quite helpful, and then we can follow up with you after.
Thank you so much.
So, to the meeting, we've got quite a full agenda, certainly for a two-hour session. And having been through the introductions, we should get straight into the first issue, which is the ICANN budget and strategic plan. So, you will see there are links to the operational plan and budget, and there's also a reference to ISPCP funding. And if you open up the operational plan and budget, you will see that there are some items which are now against providing measures of support that we haven't benefited from in the past in Annex 5 on page 72. So they cover outreach activities for the constituency. They also cover sponsored attendance to the ISP constituency and the rest of the ICANN meetings from members of the ISP community, particularly those from developing countries where they may struggle to get to the meeting. And there's also a line that provides a certain amount of funding for the constituency itself. That is one of the issues that we will be following up after the open session in the closed session that I mentioned. That will occur at the end of the meeting to kick things off to make sure that we do everything we've promised ICANN we're going to do in relation to that funding. The other thing I should particularly mention here is that we are working in conjunction with the other commercial stakeholder groups, the business constituency and the intellectual property constituency, to pull together a combined response back on the budget. And you heard some of those issues which we've identified mentioned earlier if you were attending the meeting between the commercial stakeholder group and the ICANN board when Chris Chaplow presented a few of the findings from that work at the end of the meeting. So it's been an ongoing project we've had for a long time, and the comments that Chris made at the end of that meeting, I think, are comments we'd all subscribe to, that with the new CFO taking over, there have been some quite significant changes, both in the process and in the output on the strategic plan and budget, all of which we welcome. It isn't the final approach that we were looking for, but it's certainly gone a long way to moving things along. There's a lot more detail given now against each item of funding. There are some areas where it's still quite difficult, if you look in detail, to get beneath the skin and actually find what is being covered by that pocket of funding, but we're certainly getting there. And I will say at this stage, if anybody else wants to get involved in the budget committee representing this constituency, I'd certainly be more than pleased to hear from you on that. So with that introduction, before I move on, I just want to open up if anybody else has any particular items of concern or issues they want to raise now against this item on our agenda. Okay, so that's the update of where we are, and as I said just now, the further work on this in terms of utilising the resource which we have been allocated now for financial year 13, we will be discussing in closed session at the end of the meeting. So, moving swiftly on. Update on the register accreditation agreements. You'll see on the screen there's links to the presentation that was given in the public session earlier in the week here. And there was, again, some discussion on this within the session we came away from just before lunch with the board, as well as the commercial stakeholder group, where we had further discussions around this. And it's certainly an item that the board are looking for input on. There was a statement made on behalf of the intellectual property constituency in particular in the exchange with the board that made it quite clear that they were very supportive of the proposals set out by the staff. The summary of changes you can find if you follow the link, and that they emphasise the need to actually apply in particular the WHOIS verification aspects of those proposals. Now, as a constituency, we haven't gone back on this issue at all, though we have certainly contributed to the dialogue that's gone on. Having sat through the session with the board, what I want to raise here is whether you feel there's a need now to provide any further feedback than the feedback we gave during the session this morning to the board. They are looking, I think, to take some decisions in this area, and they're looking for feedback as to what the view of the constituencies is. For us, we have, I think, long supported the need to get this done, and in some of the broader dialogue we had this morning about the challenges to ICANN, internal and external, this was a key issue that came up there. We do need to get some good news out, and that's been said a number of times this morning. And this is one area which is a significant step forward if ICANN can actually conclude the discussions that have been taking place. It's also a very, very hot issue between the GAC and the ICANN board that these agreements haven't been thoroughly pushed through and signed off. So my question is they're a view that we should put some official input back to the board, either by a short communique here or via a more formal statement that we could actually send to them. So, open for comment. Jamie.
I think Jamie Wagner. I think we should support IPC and BC comments on the point that the if a registrar wants to do business in the new GTLD arena, he should sign to the new RAA agreement. That this I personally support the idea of this being a carrot approach and a stick approach also, to that would be mandatory.
Okay, I must admit, when that was proposed, I wasn't quite sure what was the carrot and what was the stick. It sounded like two sticks to me. But what you're referring to, Jamie, is the proposal that if an existing registry wants to move into the new GTLD space, as part of that negotiation, they should accept the new registry accreditation agreements, both for the new GTLD and for their existing registry operations.
Registrar.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any other views on that? Well, let me ask, is anyone opposed to the constituency following that line, offering support for that proposal, which originally came from the IPC, but has since, sorry, originally came from the BC, but has since been endorsed by the IPC? So, hearing none, let's go ahead and do that. What would be your preferred approach towards that, Jamie? Just send a communique to the board members that we've actually discussed this following the session we had with the board this morning, and we also would offer support for that position.
I think a communique from our chair and maybe in the public forum to do that openly.
Okay, I assume there will be opportunity to do this within the public forum. I haven't looked at the agenda for this particular item, but assuming that there is, quite happy to go ahead on both fronts and do that.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Let's move on. Making good progress. Who is the next item on the agenda? And again, this has been discussed, I think, a couple of times already today, the actual situation with the response that's gone into this work from the ISP constituency. And for those who weren't there, just to run through, the initial draft report that was set out from the Who Is policy review team, which was part of the AOC commitments this team was set up. We did put a comment in against that work, and at the time it supported the general direction and urged them to move ahead with their work, produce the final report along the lines of the draft. They actually went further than that. They actually did a pretty incredible job. And what they pulled together in the final version of the Who Is review team report was a set of recommendations that were somewhat stronger than originally appeared in the draft. And I think to some of us, that came as quite a surprise. Particularly, I would suggest to Tony Harris here and a couple of others who were so heavily involved in the earlier work in the GNSO, where we just couldn't move these issues forwards for years. Actually making the progress that's occurred there is really something that I think we should all be appreciative of and almost look on in awe as to the actual work they've done. So having seen the final report, we then submitted some further comments on that, which have been posted. The link to that is on the list. And again, this morning, when we had the session with the board, we reiterated our support for that work. We urged the board to actually move forward in terms of endorsing the recommendations and then look towards implementing them. And I believe it will be on the agenda for the next board meeting. So that input seemed to be more than welcome. There is an allied piece of work that goes with this, and this is the work that's taking place on who is within the GNSO. And if I go down to the next part of the presentation that focuses on GNSO activities, I'd like to hand over to one of our colleagues on council to actually give a quick update on where these discussions are within council. So maybe Wolf, you could do that for us. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Wolf. Ulrich Norman speaking. On the council, in the GNSO, we have still, as you are aware, we have still the ongoing item of who is studies. So there are several studies on who is going on. Some of them are already in place. That means they are in. There is work on those studies. That means ICANN has engaged a company dealing with that. We have, on the other hand, a who is survey. There's a working group who is working on a who is serving survey. And this survey was sent out right now to the public or to the GNSO at least, well, and asking for response, for comments on this kind of survey, whether this is appropriate or what amendments could be done to that survey. So I would like to ask you all who have access to the ICANN site, and it's public, you know, well, if you are interested in and click on that, so you are invited, well, to comment on this survey. So that's a draft survey which is worked out regarding all who is staff and the appropriate data to be collected and so on. That's the one part regarding who is studies and who is survey. The other thing is we have for the council meeting tomorrow a motion provided with regards to who is access, so-called who is access. And this motion refers to a work which has been done within a working team of the council. Mike, you know that, 2 years ago or so, though they provided their report. That was the so-called registration abuse policy working team. And they provided recommendations council how to deal with that. For example, in order to collect reliable data and in order to provide a kind of access where the data could really be provided for in a manner which are reliable for the users of them. So there's a discussion ongoing on the GNSO whether this work has already been done or not. So we were of the opinion that there is a lack still in that work with regards to providing those who is access, and therefore we came up with that motion, well, to stick on that work and not to take a decision on council that this work has been finished and there may be no more interest of the GNSO in that respect. However, we had an extensive discussion on Saturday or Sunday this week about this motion. The contracted party house is not in favor of such a motion, arguing that way that all the items which are dealt with in those motions
are already been covered in different ways, in the RAA draft, in the RAA negotiations, in other WHOIS studies. And so far, there is no consensus on that motion and couldn't be achieved. I would say it that way. And the question for us is really, I personally could not really evaluate to what extent this type of work is already really covered in that part of the RAA, for example, because, okay, it's out of our scope. We are not part of the RAA negotiations. I heard other. I got other signals from staff. We have seen that in the RAA negotiations they are not finished. They are contentious. They are controversially discussed. So it's not clear whether really this part is going to be covered or not. So I would like to find out before I go tomorrow with that motion to the council. Well, it's on the list of the actions for the council tomorrow, but it still could be discussed. What is our view here from the ISPCP with regards to that? I would like also afterwards well to communicate this to the other constituencies in our stakeholder group in order to get their feedback to bring them in line with our views, and then let's see and let's go for that tomorrow. So, this is in brief what is it about? Who is? If you like, well, I could refer to that motion, and if you like to see that or to hear what is it about.
Yes, please do.
But it is, well, it refers to, as I said, to that work, what the registration abuse policies team did, and slightly it's just 2 years from now. So they included a lot of recommendations in this part, and a lot has been done already. So it is step by step, it is done. So, and with regards to that recommendation, the motion is easy. It's just that the council should recommend that the issue of who is access, which means to ensure that WHOIS data is accessible in an appropriately reliable, enforceable and consistent fashion, is included in the RAA policy development process when it commences. So the reason is why? Because the council put that item to that working team, which is dealing with the WHOIS survey. And this team came back, fired back to council, said, no, it's not in our scope, so we don't deal with that. And then the council came up and was asking, okay, how should we deal with it? And, okay, the idea came up, okay, let's forget it. So that was, that's, you know, because, and that's the argument from the Conservative Party's house, it's already covered in certain other areas, as I explained, you know. And that's the situation where we were, and we were of the opinion, no, that couldn't be done that way. So let's find other ways. And our proposal is to include that in a PDP around the RAA if that is commenced. So, which is still controversial, but we couldn't find any other way. So, and on the other hand, okay, our proposal is also to follow up with that in September or end of this year and look out. What happened with the RAA negotiations, is that the step going on or not? So that's our idea, not to get rid of that item, really to stick on that. And I would like to get some arguments from your side and to know about Mayor, whether this is feasible or is, from our point of view, could we say, following the discussions we had on Sunday, okay, major of this part is gone already, let's forget it. That's where I am.
Okay, thank you, Wolf. What I don't understand is if it's part of the RAA agreement already, why should you be worried about including this and supporting it as a motion?
Yes. Well, this is to explain my understanding. So I was then following up with the RAA and looking what is done in the RAA really, and also what is done with some proposals coming from the SSAC in this regard. And I thought it was more or less technically related. So it was, an update of the WHOIS protocol and all these things. This is done, really. But there may be some others open, and maybe Mikey could also assist in that.
This is Mikey O'Connor for the transcript, and also the guy that caused all this trouble. Sorry about that. I was on the RAP working group, and just to clarify, what we were working on is the port 43 access to WHOIS. There's really two ways to get WHOIS access. There's sort of the front door, if you're at your terminal in a Unix session, or if you're coming in through a web page, that's sort of the front door. But then there's a specific port 43, that you can get WHOIS data from a registrar. And what we found in the working group was that access to WHOIS data was pretty good coming in through the front door. But some of the smaller registrars were pretty erratic in their port 43 provisioning. Most were great, but quite a few weren't. And so we wrote this recommendation into the report saying, please beef up port 43. And one of the things that's happened in the interim, and I need to add to your list, Wolf, is that compliance now monitors port 43 for all registrars. And it's on some ungodly schedule, like once every 2 minutes. And if they don't respond on this two-minute test cycle, compliance starts sending them warnings automatically. And so it's my understanding in talking to some of my pals in the registry and registrar community that basically this problem has been addressed through compliance as monitoring. I didn't know about the RAP business or the RAA side of this, but I think part of the reason that you're getting so much resistance from the contracted parties is because they feel like the problem really has been solved. Because I think it's true that in order for compliance to be able to do what they did, it's got to already be in the RAA. And so I think we may be completely confused here about this. And my tendency would be to say that if we're sort of budgeting our political capital and wanting to save our bullets for really important issues, as a member of that working group, I think that I'd say this probably isn't a real big deal and that we may want to just let this one go.
Well, I don't have any problem with that. So I just, for my understanding, on the other hand, an issue seems to me with regards an SLA related to all this stuff, which is also negotiated. So and I know about that this SLA regarding WHOIS data. So an SLA, for my understanding, should include the question of quality, question operational quality. Quality in accessibility and all these things, so and that seemed to me every time a controversial issue which is not yet solved. So that was my understanding. If I'm wrong, please help me.
This is Mikey again. I think that the subtle distinction is between quality as in connectivity. So I ask port 43, and I get an answer, as opposed to quality in terms of the content. And I think that the technical access quality is what compliance is monitoring. And the content, in other words, are the fields populated with data that's nonsensical, is not being monitored, and that's the very controversial one.
Jamie?
This is Jamie, and I would like to understand, because I don't know if my poor Portuguese translation to from English, but I get somewhat confused, because from what Wolf said, it was not only a problem of access to port 43. It was more in the realm of reliability of the data, in who is data, and that's what in my understanding is that the contracted parties block any advance in here, saying that it is not in the present RAA, but the one that is being discussed, and they block there too. So this is my poor understanding of the situation, probably misguided by my mistrust in them, but I'm probably wrong. Please correct me.
There's a couple of things here I don't understand as well, because to start with, I don't think it's the port 43 access that we're focused on as the problem, which is what you're saying, Jamie, in the past. So I'm not so sure that all of the issues are resolved through the RAA agreements. The other thing that I still can't actually get a clear picture of is that if it was that simple, that everything is fine here through the registry accreditation agreements, there isn't any damage being done by this motion, because it isn't asking for anything that would be in excess of that. So why is it such a stumbling block for them that they can't sign up to if they're already doing this? Mikey?
I think that the distinction is between... So I don't want to be representing the registries and registrars, but as a member of the RAP working group, we hammered on each other long and hard on this one. And the working group was focused entirely on the technical aspect of reaching port 43. Once you reached it and got data back, if the data was nonsense, that was outside of our recommendation. And so what the registries and registrars perceive this to be, what they feel like this is doing, is dramatically expanding the scope of the recommendation that the RAP working group came up with to include data quality, and they're quite opposed to that.
That's my question to Wolf. The present, what is written in this motion right now, pertains only to port 43, or it pertains also to the reliability of the data?
Osvaldo, what I understood, what I talked with Jeff Newman, is that they recommended us to wait to see what comes out of the RAA and see if it's something is missing, then present the motion. Not that it's there, but that it might be there. Also, regarding the access to port 43, I was in the presentation they gave us. Some registrars were saying that there are three methods of accessing the WHOIS data, web, port 43, and some other one, and that they may make available one of the three, not the three of them, regarding that point in particular. So, okay.
May I?
Yes.
Well, Osvaldo, you are right. There is... Slightly different in that approach, because so one thing was, you know, that one argument, okay, was from the contracting party house, why are we doing this? This is duplication of work, if it comes to that. So because it's already covered, that was the argument. So I also
may be covered, not so already
covered. Yes, yeah, and I argued, okay, no, we wouldn't like to have duplication of work, never. Sure, but we would be sure that it is covered, it's going to be, to get covered. So, then the proposal was, okay, then let's get rid of that this time, and if it may not be covered, so then come back. But it used to be an item of consent agenda when I started to stop it. So because it was of the on the consent agenda of the council, just to make a statement that all work has been done and the council is not more dealing with that in future, and that is what I would like to avoid. And so the motion says. I also wouldn't like to provide to come with a senseless motion up, you know. It doesn't make sense that way. But it says just, okay, it should be included in the RIA policy development process when it commences. They don't like to have. That's what they would like to avoid, because they wouldn't like. Also, if a policy development process commences, they wouldn't like to have it in that process. So, I understand from that point what Mikey was saying, that in this respect, I understand. So we had several meetings with compliance as well, and they were providing us with information that what they are doing. So I understood also that was a merger of those two recommendations, wasn't it? In this regard, there were several two recommendations. This one with regards to compliance, and one with regards to who is access in the RAP report, and both of them, or the work around this has been merged through compliance. So I understood. So I could live with that. So. The question of whether it's just only port 43 related. Isn't that the case that they would like to get rid of port 43 anyway?
Sorry, from the presentation they made, port 43 is one of the discussion points that is being discussed between ICANN and the registrars.
Anyway, Jamie, again, I wouldn't be satisfied with only there is a procedure now by the compliance department that verifies. I would be much more confident if this was in the RAA. Written form, because a procedure can be abandoned and a request for compliance cannot.
Did you want to come back, Mikey?
This is Mikey. I have to admit that I'm not the closest follower of the RAA, but usually compliance doesn't monitor anything that's not in the contract. And so I think that port 43 access quality, an SLA for port 43, is already in the RAA. Now, it may be that the registrars would like to get rid of that, and especially if, in the case of THIC, who is... they may be saying, look, you can go to the registry for this. And so there's no need to have port 43 through us. So I guess my thought would be, maybe we could scurry around somewhere between now and the meeting tomorrow and visit with Jeff a little bit and clarify some of this. Because I'm just not sure. I just don't know. And
Well, regardless of that decision, isn't there another issue here, which is that we've been trying to push the RIA to be concluded for quite a time now. And even at this meeting, we're still doing exactly the same thing. And there's no assurance whatsoever that those negotiations are going to be finished.
Same for who is. Same for who is.
Yeah, so I don't see anything other than a risk if we don't support the motion, because it's just left totally open-ended, regardless of whether it's Port 43 on or not, because this isn't just about Port 43 access. Mikey?
I don't see the risk. It seems to me that if events proceeded and some of these other whois issues didn't turn out the way we wanted them to, couldn't we just bring up another motion at that time?
Yes, we could, but there was a discussion this morning that impacts back on this, and that is that there seems to be a habit in whois. The first time you have a motion on whois, the motion is about shall we have a motion rather than about shall we do anything. And that's the problem I have. It just slows everything down yet again. That was the response we gave the board this morning when they were talking about the policy review team implementations. We don't want anything that's got to go to GNSO to be about whether we should have a motion. The board either send it there with a request and we consider the motion to do something, or otherwise we don't debate it. We don't want any motions on motions, and it seems to be circular.
So
that's the way the council goes.
Not
it turns everything into process, every decision.
Well, let me add to that. So I think it could be solved that way, let me say. That we really track. We track what's going to happen in the future. So we may have time, as it was discussed with you on the council on the weekend, that we may have time well and come back again in case we are of the opinion that it is not covered. So what I would like to avoid is that if we would agree right now to refrain from that motion, then it's automatically done by the consent agenda. So I would openly speak and tell, okay, no, but it's not an item for the consent agenda. So for us, it could be still an open point, but in future, so we will track on this, and maybe end of this year we will come back. Is that a way to go? Or?
Well, I think you went further than I was thinking you were going there, Wolf. I thought what you were suggesting was that we ask for this motion to be deferred whilst this is clarified. Now you're mentioning come back at the end of the year. It seems a long way out on this.
No, deferral is a specific process. So that means deferral, you defer only once. And that means because there was no time to discuss that. So in this case, you could defer, but to the next council meeting. Then after 3 weeks or 4 weeks, it comes up again. And what is going to happen then? So deferral is not the right term in this context.
Well, it's the right term in terms of what I was proposing. Maybe that's exactly what I was proposing. That if we need time to clarify this, why don't we defer it and put it on the agenda for the next meeting? But before you answer that, Osvaldo.
Tony, no, just to clarify that, because I was checking my notes, and no, the Port 43 is not under discussion. It's other ways of accessing for the law enforcement agency. Port 43 is fixed. They have to give. What they do have is a lot of errors in Port 43, but that's the content, not the access. Sorry.
Thank you. That was helpful.
And this is a little bit too tricky, I would say, because, you know, I came up with that motion, then it was already deferred on request of the registries, and then I myself will come back with that motion telling us, oh, we need more time to discuss it because we didn't understand. No.
Okay, I didn't understand the background, but certainly you're right against that background. We don't have that as an option. So what we need to do is to make a decision here on whether we are going to go forward and support the motion tomorrow or not. Jamie. Do you want to make a proposal?
Let me understand. It was a proposal that came from you. So why not? We'll be supportive of our...
It's pretty hard when you've proposed something to suddenly say we're not supporting it.
Yes.
Now, the question is then, you know, it's a tactical question then. That means, you know, if you go for that and it's going to be defeated, then it's over.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Let me ask another question then. Certainly, my understanding is that the other constituencies within the commercial stakeholder group do support this. Where do the non-commercials sit with this?
The non-commercials had a slightly amendment, which I took as friendly, and that was just with regards to it was from their point of view with regards to the kind of data. So, but it's friendly. So they would like to accept. I saw only Wendy principally against.
Wolf. May I turn again at this? Maybe if we are defeated, I mean, in the basis that this is already in the RAA, we are not being defeated at all. Our recommendation is there. But I would require them to make a vote saying that, justifying why they to say that they are voting against because this is in the RAA already. Okay, it's okay for me. Then I accept to be defeated.
I think that's a good proposal as well. Because I don't understand what they have to lose if it's in the RAA anyway. So, but I should come back to Mikey. Mikey, you expressed the view earlier that maybe this is one we could let go, having heard this discussion, particularly the clarification on the port 43 access. How do you feel about that now?
I'm fine with any of the things that are proposed. I think that the key point that I wanted to make was that the working group recommendation was a very technical, very narrow recommendation, and the perception of this motion by the contracted parties is that this is dramatically expanding the recommendation of the working group, and that's why they're opposed to it, because the working group doesn't have consensus on what we are implying, and in fact it's difficult to predict 2 years ago what we would have done, but my guess would be we never would have come to consensus on anything to do with data quality at all.
You're absolutely true, because
excuse
we spent
me.
5 years trying to get there. So
excuse me, I must turn back to make. I will ask to vote for clarification. From my understanding, the present motion behind the council is not dealing just with the technical aspects. It has been expanded. Am I right? Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to make the call on this. Wolf Ulrich, I think, and also Osvaldo, as the council members for the ISPs, I think you're both suggesting that we should go ahead and pursue this, that we should raise the motion, vote in favour of the motion. If the motion is defeated, then I think Jamie's proposal comes in, that we should seek clarity why that they voted against and ask the direct question, that was it because this is already covered by the RIA? And if nothing else, that should then be recorded in the council minutes.
Okay, as usual, the process is as follows. The motion comes up to the council agenda. I am going to read the motion, and then there will be a discussion. And every party will put their arguments to the table, which are recorded, and inscribed, so that's it. And then there will be a vote.
But if that discussion doesn't cover that point, if that point isn't made, that the reason they're not in favour of the motion is that it's already covered in the RIA, I think that's a good time to ask that question.
Yeah, they will say, okay, it's partly covered in the RIA, and it's to other extent it's covered by the different WHOIS activities. What else, you know? In the RIA, I'm not aware, is the WHOIS protocol also part of the RIA? So because WHOIS protocol was a part of the SSAC recommendations.
It is part of the RIA, that's for sure.
Okay.
To what degree it goes down to with this particular issue, I'm unclear about. But it is part of the RIA. So is everyone in agreement with that if we take that approach? Okay. Thank you and good luck.
Should you care to accept?
Okay, next item is the update on the GTLD issues. We had the reveal date. The list of GTLDs is now published. What's on this particular slide is what are the issues for ISPs, and this is something that we've skirted around for a while. We are all aware that probably the hottest issue here at this meeting is the issue of batching. And as a constituency, we've stayed out of that discussion. Others have expressed pretty firm views. It was quite clear when this was discussed in the cross-constituency, the commercial stakeholder group today, that even within those other constituencies, there are very mixed views. We were asked some specific questions to go back to the board with this morning about batching, and all we could give them was some fairly generic answers that we all signed up to. Certainly that they should proceed with care and whatever approach they actually put forward. It needs to be a little bit better than what's been offered so far. There needs to be proof of concept that it's going to work and some faith in the actual approach. And that it has to be for the public good was the other point that was made during that session. So on that particular topic, we should probably have some discussion, open up for comment. In doing so, I think we need to take some care as a constituency here. Because it's a very tricky issue, and there's been a lot of emotion expressed around this at this meeting. But let's see where we go. Tony.
This is an issue I have a particular interest in, of course, as an applicant. But I think Tony is quite right. This is a tar baby. If we take any positions, I think it would be extremely risky. It's something that ICANN has to sort out. And they had this plan to do the digital archery, sort of lottery type of arrangement. And apparently there was concerns now that can be hacked, which is why they have suspended it. Basically, I don't really see a problem because when they originally contracted the review panels, which are, of course, extremely well-known international organizations such as KPMG, and I think the London School of Economics was mentioned also. They were thinking of 500 applications, which is why, of course, now they keep referring to the first batch of being 500 applications. As it turns out, they'll have 1,500. But that also means that instead of having $185,000 multiplied by 500, they have that amount of dollars multiplied by 1,500. So basically, they have a lot more money which they can offer to these evaluators and say, well, look, you're going to be paid by the number of evaluations. You have three times much more money to make, but we need to make this process quicker. I would transfer that problem to the evaluators, not to the community, not to the ICANN community. And the second problem they have is once you award those who get through the gate, once you say these people have title to these domains they're asking for, how do you sequence, who gets them first? Who gets into the route before the other guys? Which, that is another problem, which involves, fairness. Who gets there first? They can't put them all into the route in the same day or the same week. So that's another thing that has to be sorted out. So it's not an easy problem, and taking a constituency position, as Tony has just said, I think has more risks than rewards in the offing.
Mikey.
This is Mikey for the transcript. I was fascinated by the conversation this morning, because what's going on is the business constituency and the IPC is suddenly turning into the registry constituency. And so the conflicted views were astounding to me. I think that's part of the reason that this is so tricky. And I think that this bears a bit on the sort of reorganization question that Steve Crocker asked about what's the best configuration of ICANN going forward. And I think we're in a middle point where roles are suddenly changing. And one of the things that we might want to do is encourage people, when they speak about this issue, to indicate whether or not they're an applicant. Because if you're an applicant sitting in the business constituency and not declaring that, essentially, it's almost a conflict. We get pretty unusual policy conversation. So I'm fine not taking a position, but I think that we could raise this sort of broader issue, which is that roles here are suddenly getting very confused.
I think you made a very good point, Mikey, because we saw some companies turn up, such as Google today in the business constituency, who I'd never seen them before. And Google is an applicant, of course. It's a very good point you made.
Well, the whole situation with the impact of GTLDs is something that's also hot on our agenda as well. But certainly the landscape is changing, and there's going to be some significant impacts on ICANN through this. Jamie, did you want the floor?
I would like to ask if we are not supportive of the three positions that we already subscribe to as a consensus this morning. It says the take your time to assure no flaws, support the one disclosure of the evaluation phase, one single disclosure at the same time, and that there we have the time to figure out one kind of sequence that should prioritize global public interest. What this means for us, at least from my point of view, should take into account geographical and community considerations.
But my understanding on those three points is that we don't need to do any more, Jamie, because the session we had with the board, if you remember Steve Crocker, he went through each of those items meticulously and made a note of each one and said to us, what I'm hearing is this, and he read out exactly virtually what you said. So I think that message is out there quite clearly.
I've got a question.
We're talking about not proposing solutions.
Well, that's an open debate for us to have here.
In for the third point?
Well,
for the sequence?
Well, it's open-ended right the way across, Jamie, but we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that there's going to be other opportunities, I think, for people to put their own positions, whatever they are, into this debate. Mikey.
This is Mikey. I've got a question from the chat room. This is the distinguished Mr. Mark McFadden.
I don't know him.
You don't know him? Oh, dear. Well, maybe not the not-so-distinguished Mr. Mark McFadden. He says, the chair of the Board Improvement Committee, which is responsible for the next GNSO review, wants to concentrate on business process and not on structure. But isn't this change in the registry, registrar, business landscape a reason to look at the structure of the GNSO in the future and not just the process of the GNSO? And, you know, I think he's sort of feeding into this same theme that we've started
good.
Here.
Can I respond to that? The answer is, I think from this constituency, yes, you're absolutely right. And we already had some debates about this within the membership. It's something we're going to come to on the agenda as well. But the point that you've picked up is one that's got a lot of support from this constituency. I would suggest at the moment it's probably got more support from the ISPs than any other constituency, from some of the corridor dialogue I've heard here. That isn't to say that there aren't people in the other constituencies who think similarly to us, but on a collective view, I don't think they've reached that point. So, yeah, well, we need to pick up on this point as we work through our agenda. But I will open the floor up to see whether anybody else has got any other issues to raise here, not just on the issue of batching, but on the whole issue of the GTLD applications and whether there is anything that, as a constituency, people need to raise. This is your opportunity, Mikey.
This is Mikey again. You know, I think one of the themes that we as a constituency might want to hit sort of over and over again is that what drives us is security, stability, and resiliency. And just pound away on that. Every time a question comes up, say, well, the ISPs are generally on the sharp, pointy bit when things aren't right, because it's the customers, when things break, tend to call us. And so just as a sort of underlying theme in our comments about the new GTLDs and basically anything else, keep pounding away on the SSR theme.
Yep, good point. And there may be an opportunity here when these discussions are going on, particularly in the public forum. That point may need to be made. Yes, please. Welcome.
Hi, this is Eduardo Parajo. I agree completely with you, Mike, because one of the sessions that I already participate, the one of the questions is how will be the process to insert the new GTODs on the routes? How is the speed that we can do that? Because if you have a problem with that, we are having a biggest problem to everybody here. So in this session, it's not official, that was conducted by Thomas, I believe. This is one of the questions that he will ask to verify. And this is really important, because if you accelerate the process, maybe you have a big issue on the internet in the world. So we have, I believe that we make a comments on that direction, the stability of the system, and also verify the how fast we can go. Because I heard the chair said that is 1,000 a year, that's the maximum. So we need to verify the technical issues of our side.
Okay, thank you, Eduardo. Mikey.
The esteemed Mr. McFadden is commenting again in the chat, and I just want to inject his comments. The first comment is back just a bit. He wanted to follow up by saying that in terms of the reorganization conversation, we, the ISPs, may want to interact directly with the board committee on that question. Because it's interesting, and I'm now going to elaborate a little bit on what he's saying. It's interesting how our interests are starting to diverge from the ISPs, essentially from the brands, who now are suddenly acting a lot more like registries than they used to. And so we may want to, you know, I agree with Mark, we may want to go straight to the board committee and talk to them directly. And then in terms of your comments, he said, I would say that history shows that if there are problems that customers have with the new GTLDs, they tend to blame the ISPs for those problems. This happened with the introduction of .travel and .museum, for instance. So I think he's chiming in right behind you on that.
Yeah, the trouble with the esteemed Mr. McFadden is he's always in front, and he's in front on this one because his first point about interacting with the board committee is exactly right, and it was something, again, that we were going to come on to. And the second point is very pertinent to this constituency. The issue that Mark raised, particularly with the introduction of those earlier, longer domain names, when they didn't work, we were actually accused of filtering them out as ISPs, and the problem wasn't at that layer at all. I know you were involved in this as well, Tony. It was more the fact that the software couldn't cope with the longer names. And it's those sort of issues, any issues that come up through this expansion of the namespace is likely to bounce back on us yet again. So Eduardo and Mikey are both absolutely right. The emphasis for us should always be on the SSR aspects of this. Tony.
You not only have the possible technical problems, which is what happened in the first two rounds, but also with so many new domains coming out, you'll find small ISPs, particularly in small cities in Latin America, for example, who will call their ISP and say something's not working, and customer will call the ISP. And the ISP will say, well, that domain doesn't exist. I've never heard of it. And this could very well happen with a telephone cooperative or a small wireless ISP working somewhere in the hinterland in northern Argentina. So I think we have our work cut out for us to see how we can get to these people, at least so that they should be aware of what's coming.
Eduardo.
Thank you. Yes, you are completely correctly. Yeah, we need to also have a huge announcement about when they started, because this will happen. Be certain about that. If we could have some huge announcement about when we started to introduce the new GTLDs, you'll be very helpful to everybody who has the technology that this is happening.
Wolf?
Yes, I have another question beyond that. That's stability and the security things. That is, so we were just mentioning that the BEC and the IPC are faced with newcomers, which may have 2 feet, one BEC, the other one the registry. So what is about us here? Will there be a movement, let me say, around, so some of us going to get involved in the registry business, whatever? Could we expect new ISPs? Well, I doubt a little bit, but would that be the case? How are we affected by that? So the question is really then, is it something which affects us here in our structure with regards to just the list which has been published for the new applications? I did not check that, no, not yet. So I really, I don't know. So I have seen only just as I mentioned privately, for example, some telecom providers in Qatar or wherever they've applied for an TLD. Others did not. So.
Yeah. A quick answer on that is, well, we certainly don't know, but there is the potential for some increase. There are a few ISPs that have applied. Certainly, there are a few big connectivity providers listed for new GTLDs. So potentially there is, but they are faced with the same problem that a lot of these are, which is where do they fit? And even with our existing membership, for instance, France Telecom, you can fit in a number of places within the GNSO. And these new applicants, they're in exactly the same situation. We've heard that the registry constituency have already looked at changing their actual charter so they can afford people observer status. That's one thing that's happening. We've seen from the discussions we've been involved in the commercial stakeholder group, there was almost a fight starting at one stage between whether these new applicants should go in the IPC or whether they should go in the BC. But they've got other options as well. So it certainly is going to change that. What the impact back on us is, I wouldn't like to guess at this stage, Wolf. I do think it's probably less than some of the other constituencies. But that is still a real issue for us because the GNSO, it isn't just about numbers. It's about getting the balance right so that the policy that comes out of the sausage machine is actually policy that is reflective and in the public interest, to go back to that point as well. Did you want to add something?
I just add to that at least from our experience in Argentina, I think all our members, ISPs, we have like 150 of them now all over the country, are resellers of domain names. So basically they are in the registrar business. So, but I mean, we're sitting here representing them in the ISPCP.
I would say the same for Brazil. I would bring the same contribution. We have already mixed hats in this constituency, and I think that there is no the problem isn't getting bigger. It's the same of the same.
Okay, so what I really heard there, that what came out of that initial debate on GTLDs, is that we're not going to get into the realms of trying to thrash out any proposal, and that's probably fairly wise. What we are going to do is keep emphasising the need to be very cognisant of the SSR issues, and we will keep making that point whenever it seems appropriate. And we will come back to the issues that Mark referred to, and I think Wolf has picked up on, the issues of the impact of the programme back on us. So that's something that we'll pick up on the agenda. But let's move on now to the next thing. And this is Mikey's show on the IRTP. Mikey.
Thanks, Tony. Those of you on the Adobe room can see the next slide. Tony gets to scramble on his PC for a minute for those of us in the room. So if you want to watch Tony, oh, he's very clever. He just unplugged his PC from the screen, so we can't watch him jump about. The IRTP working group, IRTP stands for Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy. It's a long-standing policy, and this is probably the longest-running PDP in the history of ICANN. We started, I think, in 2005 on this one. It's a five-part PDP. We're on part three. And we are down to about three of us who write it all because everybody else is exhausted. And it's awfully hard to bring any new people up to speed. So this is pretty inside baseball. But there are three issues that we're talking about this time, and we are running a session tomorrow And I just wanted to introduce this to you today, very briefly, and then we can carry on. The three issues that we're talking about in this round are change of control versus transfer. I'll circle back to that in a minute. Another one that's much more narrowly focused is, should the form of authorization, FOA, to do these transfers be limited in time? And I'll explain that in a minute, too. And then the final one, which is extremely inside baseball, is whether registries should be required to use IANA IDs for registrars rather than their own proprietary IDs. And so let me circle back to the first one. If you transfer a domain from one registrar to another and at the same time change the administrative contact, in other words, change essentially, you can't say owner because, you know, these aren't really property, but if you change the control, if you change the entity that controls the domain, there's a pretty substantial risk. This is one of our SSR-type topics. This is a very good way to steal domain names. You hack the credentials of the entity that controls the domain, usually hack their easily hacked email. You use that to gain control of the account at the registrar. You transfer the name to a new, much friendlier registrar, often transferring it through several of those. And that multiple transfer process makes it very hard for anybody to retrieve the domain back to the correct owner. And so this is primarily a security, stability, you know, it's an SSR kind of thing. And I'm one of the folks that's pushing pretty hard to get this enacted. And what we want to do, or at least our current proposal, is to say you can transfer a domain, but the entity that controls the domain needs to be the same on both sides of the transfer between registrars. And then, if you want to also change who controls the domain, that's fine. Do that after it's moved to the new registrar. Because then what we're proposing is that once this change of control has taken place, the domain cannot be transferred to a new registrar for 60 days. So what this does is it puts the domain essentially in a box. And so if somebody steals it, you have 60 days where the registrar can fix this without this huge, cumbersome process that exists at the registry level right now. You would think that this would be not terribly controversial, but of course, there's another side to the discussion. What's going on is that over the last 10 years or so, the domain aftermarket has emerged. Domainers list their domains for sale in auction, like at Seto, for example. And their goal as a business is to make the transfer to the new owner very fast. It's a convenience thing. And so while the large registrars like GoDaddy and Network Solutions and so on are in favor of this approach, there's a community, essentially the domainer community and the aftermarket registrars that support them, that are very uncomfortable with this proposal because it slows down their business process. And so we have been negotiating like crazy, and I don't think I want to bore you with all that today, but if anybody's interested in this kind of thing, I've been living with this since 2005. I'm happy to, you know, I will explain this in exchange for beer. How about that? And so I just wanted to let you know that this is coming, and if you happen to think that it would be a good idea to allow rapid transfer of registrar and control. We should talk about that today, but I'm presuming that I'm bobbing along in the direction that you all would support on that. Maybe I'll just stop at that point and talk about that one, and then we'll go to the next two. Jamie, you want to go ahead?
When will this come to the council for voting?
We've published our interim report. We're doing a workshop tomorrow. We'll go out to public comment starting sometime after this meeting, and we'll come back to the Toronto meeting with a final report. And it's sort of in that time frame, I would expect, sometime after Toronto, that we will actually get something to the council. And during the public comment cycle, I plan to sort of chat with you on the list, and we'll write a comment that sort of summarizes our position. So it's not like you are seeing something go out the door that you have to react to really fast right now. I just want to give you a heads up that that's what's going on this. Anything else on this particular one?
Well, all I would say on this is something that I'm pleased you flagged, because I think it needs to go particularly out to members of the ISPCP who have an interest in this business, and there are some people here who do that. So the advance warning is welcome, particularly if we're getting into the realms of the report period as well. So thanks for that. Wolf?
Yes, Wolf Knoben speaking. Mike, you have one question. Since we have on council, and so several years, I would like to see, we have talked about IRTP, different parts. What else? You know, so it's a huge thing, and then it's split up in different parts. So I remember that to some extent, for example, it was more of interest of the IPC something. And more contractual issues seem to me. So how is that with this part here? So from that understanding. So what do we have to expect here?
I think this one's less contentious. We're very close to true consensus in the working group. The one group that, as I said, is having a little trouble with this is the aftermarket folks. And what we're doing right now is tuning this language in such a way that we can accommodate their needs as well. Essentially, what we're coming up with is the idea that the default position for a domain is SSR. And then if a registrant, if a person who controls a domain chooses to waive those, to remove those protections, we're providing a mechanism for them to do that. So we're saying that, in general, the typical registrant is a business where this domain is very important to their business, and if it's stolen, it's a catastrophe for the business. And so the default position is security, but if you are a domain investor that wants to move your domain around very quickly and you choose to accept more risk that it might be stolen, you can turn off that protection in advance. And that line of negotiation seems to be working out pretty well. If we can figure out a way to remove that protection that isn't vulnerable to the same hacking that the current system is. Because if I can hack into your email account and transfer your domain away, I can probably hack into your email account and waive all your rights. And so we haven't quite got this figured out yet. But that's sort of the direction we're going in. If we can figure that out, then I think the working group will come back with complete consensus and it will just fly through the council. Unlike some of the earlier ones where we didn't get to consensus in the working group.
Mikey, this is probably a stupid question, but I'll ask it anyway.
Yeah, right.
Is there any reason to want to transfer the domain quickly other than these guys who base their business on it. It's their business model. They make a lot of money out of it. But is there any other benefit from being able to do that quickly?
Well, I think that's the old discussion that goes all the way back to, is it necessary for domains to be in the root 30 seconds after they've been purchased at a registrar? You know, and a lot of people would say the faster these things can happen, the more responsive we are to our customer, if I'm channeling as a registrar. And I'm not sure that I disagree a whole lot with that. It is kind of nice to buy a domain on an impulse like geezercast.com and start podcasting, 5 minutes later. So I think that if there's a way to do this that is secure, then it's all right.
So looking at your slide, the last point you have on here about the IANA IDs, what is the situation with that? Is there pushback against that? And if so, why?
Just a brief background. When a registrar is doing transactions with a registry, usually through the EPP protocol, there's always automation back and forth. There has to be an identifier in the database as to which registrar you are. And the source of this is mostly from the registrars who, if the ID in the database is proprietary to the registry, and this will become an even more difficult problem when there are 1,000 registries or 2,000. If it's proprietary, then it's very hard to figure out which registrar is transferring a domain away from you. And so the registrars would like to use a consistent ID so that they know, there's one table to look this all up. So the registrars are very keen on this one. And I, as an SSR kind of guy, sort of go, yeah, this sounds like a good idea. So I'm keen on that too. The pushback comes from the registries. And the problem that the registries have is that not all the ccTLDs don't use IANA IDs for their identifier because they don't subscribe to the same set of standards that the gTLDs do. And so one of the things that they're trying to figure out is how do we accommodate, and so their solution to this is when doing all this is they have their own proprietary list. The place that we're headed is, and another registry that has a proprietary list is VeriSign, which has a large number of domains under management since they run .com. And they're very grumpy about the idea of having to change their whole numbering system, and I can understand that. So it's partly architectural and it's partly just changing a complex business process. Where we're going with this one is to say, yes, registries are required to provide the IANA ID in these transactions, but they don't have to use it in the transaction. They just have to include it in the transaction. So if they have a proprietary ID, they can continue to do that, but they have to include the IANA ID as well so that the losing registrar can tell quickly and easily who's taking the domain away. And so I think we're going to come to complete consensus on that one. I'm not sure.
So the short answer to that is...
Don't ask me for short answers.
Well if you go down that path, if you don't go down that path, you're just storing up a big problem with more and more GTLDs coming in.
Yes. I think that taxing my memory here, I think that the IANA ID is required for new Gs. I think it's in the applicant handbook.
Okay.
I'm not positive about that. I have to go look.
But CCTLDs don't. So
they're in a completely different space.
Yeah, but
they're not under
but some registries will eventually make a transfer from CCTLDs, and this in this event they will use their own numbers.
Well, not if it's in the guidebook. They won't be able to.
No, I will. They will use the proprietary IDs.
Yeah, they've got to make that change. Sorry, I was thought you were saying it the other way around. They're going to have to use these.
Yeah, they will use their proprietary IDs. So, is there a requirement for them to publish who these IDs to say who is who to identify for a registrar to identify? Who to whom it's being transferred?
In the transaction, in the EPP
transaction. No, I mean publicly this, because these proprietary IDs, they don't have. There is no requirement for them to publish that.
That's right, and in fact, they would argue that to publish it is a security breach. That's one of the arguments that. Especially VeriSign makes, and it's a compelling argument because they wrap a fair amount of security around their proprietary IDs, and so what we're negotiating right now is a way to preserve that security and yet provide the identifier
when there is one.
Yeah. Yeah, and just to skip back to the middle one, the form of authorization one, very quickly, is in a way similar. These are clumped. The reason we have five of these is because we tend to clump the issues together. The form of authorization is essentially the ticket. It's the authorization ticket that you use to say, yes, I have the authority to transfer this domain to another registrar. And it turns out that the aftermarket likes to leave those, they like to create that form of authorization and then leave it in force indefinitely. And some of us say, but wait, that's a giant security issue, because that means that essentially it's pre-authorized forever. And that's a problem for most of us. It's a good thing for the rapid transfer group that's the aftermarket. And we're coming to a pretty similar negotiated settlement on that says, if you want to pre-authorize and lose that security, we'll provide the registrant a mechanism to do that, but the default will be that a form of authorization will expire probably in 60 days. Is sort of where we seem to be landing on that. So that's sort of a short version of B.
Isn't that a break of security for all the... should we be so kind with the domainers? To have such things that they waive... security for everybody, because a thief or somebody could use their domains to cause harm, and they use it. Could not, they will.
Essentially, these are security holes in the IRTP that have existed ever since IRTP was created. And unfortunately, what's happened is that whole industries have grown up to fill those holes. And so... If you were to look around the table and we were the IRTP from all the different constituencies, the only people who are opposed at all to any of this are the aftermarket folks. And if the sense of the IRTP, this is sort of inside scoop, but I don't think it's any secret because these are all public calls. The sense of the group is security is more important. And if we can negotiate an acceptable solution that preserves the aftermarket but also preserves security, well, then fine. If we can't, then security will carry the day. And we haven't, we've got between now and Toronto to see if we can find that solution. And if we can't, then the rest of the IRTP working group is going to say, well, then too bad. We're going to close these holes.
So with that, Mikey, I think it would be helpful if you could just keep us up to date when we get to that stage where maybe we need to give some input. It sounds a little bit to me like almost like a car rental company saying book online and by the way we'll leave all the keys in the car so you don't have to come into the office.
The esteemed Mr. McFadden has answered your question in the chat. Sorry about that. Mark says, making the registries use IANI IDs for registrars adds to transparency and accountability. Is there any meaningful reason not to use IANI IDs? Well, I've sort of rattled through this. I'm reading backwards in the chat here. And then the question was, is the IANI ID required in the new GTLD agreement? And Mark is much, much more familiar with that agreement than I am, and he confirms that it is. So new Gs will have IANI IDs in it.
Mike, a question. This is Eduardo. But the idea to review this is just to apply more security in the process. This is the main idea. And of course, maybe the aftermarket guys are not happy with some time or limits that you need to have to transfer the domain name. This is the main concern.
Yeah, that's the primary difficulty. Just one little anecdote. We educated ourselves on this one by having different people go through the domain name transfer process with a variety of different registrars and just take screenshots of what it was. The shortest process was 27 screenshots long. And the longest one was up in the 50s. I mean, these are not super smooth processes. And so what's happened is that this aftermarket community has said, we want to make this a one-click process. And they've built very fast processes, very convenient processes to do that. And they're to be commended for that. They're taking care of their customer. And the IRTP process is very cumbersome and does need to be smoothed out, but at the same time, we need to make sure that the security is there, and that's sort of the paramount direction that the IRTP is going.
Thanks, Mikey. One of the things we spoke about this morning with Akram was the need to get out some good messages from ICANN, and this is sort of an example of that to me, because it's saying, because we've got this expansion of the namespace, we're going to get all these new GTLDs, we're fixing some of the holes that are currently there. It's a good message.
I also want to make it clear that this is a pretty collaborative group between registries, registrars, and registrants, whatever I was in the BC or here. These calls are not antagonistic calls. We're generally working pretty effectively to get to solutions for everybody on this. And so I think that's another important good message. I'm going to hand the stage back to Tony, so I want to do an advertisement for one other thing. I'm working as the GNSO chair and effectively the total chair for the DNS Security and Stability Analysis Working Group, which is this cross-constituency monstrosity that got created a couple of years ago. And I just want to highlight that I'm going to be updating the council tomorrow on this, and that we're going to have essentially a security and stability morning on Thursday, where it's the ESAC for an hour, it's my gang, the DSSA, for an hour and a half, and then the board risk management framework committee has an hour and a half after us. So if you're interested in SSR, Thursday morning is when you really get a fix on your SSR stuff. Back to you.
Okay, thanks very much for that, Mikey. So, moving on with the agenda. The next item is this impact of the GTLD program. And I'll go through this item by item as to where we are. The first point was that the need to look at the ISP-CP charter against the likely impact of constituencies. And I mentioned earlier that the registry constituency, they've already looked at ways of getting observer status for members in there. So these would be people who have applied for GTLDs, going to run a registry, not running a registry yet. Potentially that they would be able to sit in there as well as some other parts of the GNSO. For us, the impact is, as we mentioned, probably a little less significant, but it will have an impact, and we do need to look back at the charter. One of the things we don't have in our charter is observer status. What we do have in the charter is a statement to say that you can be a member of another constituency. That's already the case, but you have to declare that you're a member of another constituency, and you're only allowed to vote in one constituency. So you have to declare whether that's this constituency or another one. You only get one place. The situation with the charters for all of the constituencies was a little bit unclear to me, so I took some time out here to check up with Rod Hogarth where we stand. We were asked to submit revised charters a while back as part of the GNSO reform, and the reason for doing that was that the board was supposed to look at those charters and endorse the new constituencies. So we did all the work. We then got told it had to fit within a specific template that aligned with the GNSO review, so we went back and we did that as well. And it's been left on the table with the board. What the board did was to actually approve a new constituency, but they never approved the existing ones. So we sort of live in this abyss at the moment. Yeah. So we're just carrying on. So my question to Rob was, where do we go with this? What happens if we want to amend it now? And he's given us pretty much free rein to go back and make amendments that may be required through the impact of the program, as long as we keep within the template and the structure of what was set out under GNSO reform, and to keep them up to date as well. So he said, do the work that you need to do, get it agreed in a constituency, send us a copy so we're up to date with where we are. And then when the board do finally get to that stage where they're going to rubber stamp all the constituencies, hopefully, then they'll have the latest version. So it is within our power to actually change that and move it forward. And that's a piece of work that I think we need to progress again between now and Toronto, to go back, look at the charter, make whatever tweaks we think we will need, but probably a lot less than some others. The other thing that comes out of this is the second point. We need to look at the impact on the current structure. And members of the ISP took the opportunity to meet here earlier in the week, and we had some dialogue about the impact on the structure. And what's going to get very tricky is this issue of balance within GNSO. We're going to see some pretty big growth, I would think, in terms of participation, but in some constituencies more than others. What's important is what comes out of that in terms of the policy development process. Because when ICANN was originally formed, if we turn the clock back, the constituencies didn't just come out of the blue. What happened was there was some thought to who were the stakeholders in GNSO policy. And groups were formed so that there was a balance between all involved parties that was part of that process. Now, that balance now is going to be challenged without any doubt, because where we all fitted pretty much, I think, into one category or the other, ISPs and providers sitting in here, registries, registrars in their appropriate place. As somebody mentioned earlier, now you're going to have people wearing multiple hats that can sit anywhere. So the balance is going to change, because when we actually do the policy development, the views that come in to those discussions are probably going to be driven from a perspective that wasn't there before. And we heard mentioned earlier in the day the influx of brand holders that some people are thinking about. Could be pretty big numbers coming in, and they could look to drive the policy down a totally different path. So we discussed this earlier in the week, and one of the proposals that we discussed was the ability to make sure that everything that happens in the GNSO moving ahead is purely GNSO policy and nothing more. And that seems to make a lot of sense, because at the moment we have groups like the CCSO. They meet as a group. They deal with all of the business that a CCSO has to deal with. But they also deal with the other things that happen in ICANN. They have a group that looks at the budget, the operating plan, ethics, outreach, all of those things, which are big issues, not just for the CCSO, they're big issues for all of us, not just for the GNSO. And the same, the ALAC, they work in a similar way, where they have this group of people that deal with everything. And it's not always been helpful. One of the tensions that's come out of this has been the formation of some of the broad working groups, where we've had issues. I think the example that was explained to me was on one of the cross-community groups where the ALAC were involved, the CCSO were involved, and the GNSO were involved. So they got together as a cross-working group, and they were looking to agree what they had to do. And what happened was the GNSO then went and developed a charter. So we had these other groups that were then working into a charter that had been developed in the GNSO. And when the output of that group came to fruition, the way it works with the charter is it then goes back into the GNSO to see how it aligns. The council, yes, sorry, I should have said GNSO council. So it goes back to council to actually look and see that they've met the criteria that was set out for them. Now, that's not a particularly good way of working, because the other groups don't particularly like it, although they've run with this. So what came out of our discussion the other day was a need to try and separate out some of the big picture issues and deal with them in a different way. And what we haven't done, and I'm not so sure we need to do, following the comments from the board this morning, is to look to put in place the actual detailed changes, or propose the detailed changes as to how that would work, but set out the principles for that arrangement and how that would work. And the aim within the ISPs is now to produce a document that we were requested this morning, certainly informally by the board after we had the session with them, to get to them as quick as we can, that sets out our ideas as to how you can do that. So what we're proposing is a different level of discussion that takes the issues that need to be addressed commonly across ICANN. It takes it out of the existing support organisations, but puts it in a place where they'll all come together on the same level and deal with those issues. And also it gets us out of some of the contentious discussions we've had in the GNSO, where there's been some debate between some of the constituencies about what is council business and what is constituency business. The difficult part of that proposal is actually deciding which issue goes where. But when we had the discussion with the board this morning, they came along informally afterwards and said, at this stage, they're not particularly looking for answers as to how you do the detail. What they want set out is a set of principles that could actually look towards providing a plan for them
to restructure the organisation to make it far more effective. And I think we identified when we looked at this the other day, you can also make some efficiencies in doing it that way as well. You can certainly cut down some of the timelines. Mikey?
This is sort of a point of personal privilege. We just lost the audio on the bridge, and I'm wondering if we could take just a short break so that if we took a break right now, can you bounce it?
When I dial back in, it'll come in through the PA. So.
Yeah, so if we could just take a short 30-second cycle while we get this thing lit back up.
How long have we been off air?
A couple of minutes. McFadden's got a comment. But I just as soon let him be back on the air before I read it so that if I get it wrong, he can hear me get it wrong and then correct me via the bridge. So,
let's do that.
This shouldn't take long, but we just didn't want to have this big surprise come out of the speakers for you. So we could tell jokes.
We could talk about McFadden.
We could talk about McFadden, but he can't hear us.
And I apologize. Normally I can do this without disrupting the meeting, but there's something going on with the actual Skype system. If you want to mute your mic, I'm going to call them back in. You'll hear me connecting back over the PA. It won't take more than just a few seconds.
Okay, we'll have to chunder on a bit afterwards because we have the closed session after.
What about the items we have to still to cover?
Can everyone
mute
their
mics? Just turn.
Because I'll be talking on the mic.
Welcome to the conference call.
Thank you for calling.
Yes, the password is ISPCP.
Your first and last name for spelling?
My name is Colin, C-O-L-I-N, Doyle, D-O-Y-L-E.
I'm sorry, last name, please, for David, O-Y-L-E?
Yes, D-O-Y-L-E.
Thank you. One moment, please.
Looking at the jokes that are going across the airwaves, I think the sooner we get back on air, the better.
I'll join you. You'll have an open mind. You may press star 0 for any operator assistance, and there will be silence until others join.
Thank you very much.
All right, then. We're back on the air. The esteemed Mr. McFadden should be able to hear us. We've been exchanging jokes by chat, and...
Okay, so
we're all good.
I'm not sure where we lost the stream, so apologies to those who are back on. Assume you're back on, Jen, and Mark's back on. I don't know how much you missed. So I was explaining some of the proposals that have been made that we're going to work on in terms of separating out some of the broader issues for ICANN and dealing with them in a different forum from everything going through council in the GNSO that others can contribute to on the same level. So it involves the other support organisations as well. Hopefully you got all of that.
I would like to, for the benefit of those that are newcomers, I would like to add a consideration. In the present structure of the GNSO Council voting agreement, the contracted parties have a power of blocking anything that they are against, if they feel this deals with their day-to-day business, it's their life that is implied, they tend to block, and sometimes they are these. Fears are overrated, and this is a problem with the present structure. So the other side, the other side of the non-contracted parties' house, which we fit in, not always. I think it is this is where the concerns are now. If there is a good balance from in this side of the fence, but I would say that mixed hats always happened, and Tony Harris gave an example that I subscribe to. So what I do think is that this structure with the power to create obstacles, yes, to proceed in any discussion, and also there is a tendency to everything is understood as process and reduce it to process policy, and everything has a process side, and so I feel it extremely difficult to say to find an issue that has no process side, you know, and so there is a big problem in finding the issues that the council would not claim that it affects their life. Not the council, the contracted parties.
Let me give you a quick example there, Jeremy. Who is an example where clearly who is policy for the GNSO actually does impact council. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But if you look at the who is report that came out of the AOC activity, that affects far more than the GNSO. So there's absolutely no reason why that can't be dealt with at two levels, if that's the case. But I don't want to get into the details of that, because I think that's a lengthy, detailed discussion that we'll actually have to face in the future rather than now. I think you had a comment online, Mikey.
Yeah, Mark had a comment that runs right down the tracks, I think, that you're talking, Jamie. He says, and this was just before everything went offline, he said, I believe that if you subscribe to the idea that balance in policymaking is important, then the opportunity to address the issue of balance is during the next GNSO review. But unfortunately, the current chair of the SIP, and I don't know what the SIP is.
Structural Improvement Committee.
There we go, SIC. Has no interest in structural issues, only process issues. I think that that's potentially a huge problem for ISPs. What ISPs need to do is engage the SIP committee that identifies the issues related to balance and proposes alternative approaches to making balance work. So it sounds like we're all kind of coming at the same thing. He's typing like mad. Let's see what he's got. Oh, he's just saying thanks, Mikey. So I guess I got it right. There's Mark's comment.
Okay, and for your information, Mark, and everybody else's, we actually had the door open to have that discussion because it was the representatives of the SIC, that came up to us following the session we had with the board this morning, asking for that sort of input. So I think it does fit in with that. I also believe that it would be wrong to personally to have another GNSO review before we've done this work, because it cuts across everything we need to consider. And if they just look at the GNSO as it is now and have another review of that, it isn't going to change fundamentally. It's not going to change enough. So it's better to look at the big picture view, I think, and try and get some ideas in. So what we've agreed to do is to produce a white paper on this, and to certainly get that now to the Structural Improvements Committee as soon as we can. We've also said to them that we would be ready to engage in some form of discussion on these issues at the Toronto meeting. And they've said we'd also like some ideas about how we could organise this for Toronto. So the door's open for that as well. They're looking to do something. They don't quite know what needs to be done or the best way to do it. So that's something we can work on between now and then. The other bullet on this particular slide talks about liaising with the commercial stakeholder group and other constituencies. As far as that debate goes, we have spoken about this approach with the other commercial stakeholders, not formally but informally with some members of the commercial stakeholder executive. And they sort of warm to the idea. There's a willingness to talk about these things. We haven't spoken to the other stakeholder groups. That's something we need to do, and it's something we need to do between now and Toronto. So there's a big piece of work here, a very important piece of work as well, and it's something that I'm sure we'll be facing when we have our future calls across the period between now and Toronto. So, with that and the fact that we do have this closed session, I'm going to move on. I think this is the last item under AOB. I had on here participation in working groups, and I just wanted for the record to record currently where that participation is, because there are some groups we need to ramp up participation in. So I'd like to just ask people who are currently acting in working groups just to update everybody, not with the discussions in their working group, but just what groups they're involved in. Mikey, I know you're involved in some of these, so do you want to start?
This is Mikey. I'm in IRTP. I'm in the FIC Renewal Notices group. I'm chairing the DSSA. Essentially, my posture is anything that has to do with policy for registries, registrars, essentially the core mission of the GNSO, I'm on those working groups. Anything to do with process, I'm not. That's the easy way to think about that.
Okay. Thanks. Osvaldo?
Yes, I'm in the IOC or the Red Cross drafting team.
Wolf?
Yes, I'm chairing the SCI, Standing Committee on Improvement Implementation, and I'm on outreach.
SCI is a job for life, of course. It seems to go on forever.
It came to my mind. It was very tricky. You know, the charter of the SCI is talking about chair election, but doesn't have a term for that. So we should immediately talk about that. So that's on the agenda.
Okay, Tony, what groups are you involved in? For the ISPs?
Here in ICANN?
Yeah.
Sorry, nominating committee?
Yeah, but you're also in some working groups, aren't you, I thought?
In the CCNSO study group on the impact of CODs and geographical name, whatever it is, a very long one.
Okay. And for my part, is currently involved in the budget committee. So I think what we need to do on the next call that we have is look at some of the other things we need to engage in and how we're going to do that. So if anyone has any ideas in advance of that, please let me know. As for dates of future conference calls, what I would propose is that we don't determine that until we've had this closed discussion that's going to take place next. And once we've had that, I'll send a proposal for dates for the next conference call to the list. So this is where I ask if there's any other business. Yes. Wolf.
Yeah, just the last point, though, because what's going on in council meeting tomorrow is also we have one point raised with regard to the uniformity of reporting. You may remember we discussed that. So that is also an outcome of this registration abuse policy work, one of that. And it's also about the question, well, the council would get rid of that, but we
may have an interest in to keep that alive and find a way how to deal with that. The matter is that it seems to be that it's not just only GNSO related, maybe in parts, and so the question is then, do we, though the council, and there was a view of on council, well, to leave that item, but if he could find a way how to deal with that, so we would be happy. And at Mikey, you especially, you were talking about that. So it's just a question how we deal with that tomorrow. So I could introduce a point, yeah, and then maybe I will be backed from your side, and then we'll see what's going to happen.
Okay, sounds like a plan. Thank you.
Just from my understanding, we could do it in a side talk.
Okay, we'll leave that to you guys. Yes, sorry.
Thank you. My name is Oliver. I'm representing the German Internet Industry Association, ICO, and the European ISP Association, EuroISPA. I've been a little bit late, so I might have missed something that I wanted to raise when you were discussing the WHOIS issues. You circulated something about via the mailing list regarding the reconsideration request from the IPC stakeholder group in connection with the .cat exemption for the WHOIS system. Has that been discussed, or is the discussion going on via the mailing list, or what's the status?
No, just to bring everyone up to date, that was a situation where .cat were asking basically for an exemption from the WHOIS, and what was decided was that we would support the IPC view on that actually opposed that. The rationale for that was as much that in an era where we're trying to get a much more accurate WHOIS, that we are basically trying to make sure WHOIS becomes a really useful tool rather than what it's turned into over the years. Also against the report that came out from the policy committee, which strengthened WHOIS quite a lot, if those recommendations are taken up by the board, it seemed counter to that to suddenly move away from WHOIS in the way that was being proposed for .cat. And that was the basis that we went forward on that issue.
If we still have the time, I would just like to contribute one or two sentences, even if that discussion.
Well, we are pushed for time, but I don't want to close this down too much. The situation, though, for clarity, is that what we did, we submitted a statement to the, I think it was to the board. Reconsideration committee, because what we were asking for was for the board to reconsider that. So we have gone as far as now putting in a statement that basically just says that it didn't say any more than we share the concerns that were expressed by the IPC about this and suggest the board should have another careful look at it. So on the back of that, what would you be proposing?
If we support it now, then the discussion is closed, of course. I just wanted to raise a point concerning data protection. Excuse me. Basically, I think as an ISP, as an ISP association, I'm convinced that data protection and complying with data protection laws is a very important point for our business. And so basically, I'm always in favor with any company, regardless of which part of the industry that aims to comply with data protection laws. In this case, obviously, there has been some kind of statement of the Spanish Data Protection Authority saying that the current WHOIS system is in line with Spanish data protection. However, there's also a European legal framework for data protection, and for those of you who are from Europe may be aware of that. This framework is revised right now. The legal process of this, the legislative process has started. So, I think that is something that is very important for us, basically. And on the other hand, the the idea behind the reconsideration request from the IPC is quite clear. I mean, their interest is to enforce copyright laws and copyright infringements. And if any company feels that they have to comply with their national law or with European data protection law, basically I would have supported that. But I had the chance to do it via the mailing list. I missed it, so it's closed.
But the point is, I think the very fact we took that action is in line with what you actually want to achieve. So we may not have managed to embrace your words, but we embrace the spirit of that, I think, within our recommendation. Thank you for that. It is an important issue. And we will watch very carefully to see what happens with that and to make sure everyone's aware of the outcome. Thank you. So with that, I'm going to draw this meeting to a close. I would ask that those who aren't members of the ISP constituency now leave us to debate some of our internal issues at this stage. Thank you very much for coming. I hope everybody signed the list of attendees. If you haven't, please do.
You haven't signed yet, actually.
I haven't signed. And for those who aren't members, if you'd like to leave a business card so I can follow up, I'd be very pleased to do that. And to those who joined us on the link, thank you very much. Really appreciate your participation. Thank you.
This is Mikey. For those of you that are in the Adobe room, I'm going to boot you out unless you tell me that you're members. Oh, Mark's already gone. He's out of here. So we're going to shut down the Adobe Connect session. For those of you who are still with us, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you on the calls, those of you who are members. Those of you who aren't members, now you can join and participate in this scintillating conversation. Good, good. Talk to this guy.
So you want me to hang up the call?
Yeah, I think we can hang up the call and kill the feed.
No web stream, nothing.
I think we're done with Adobe, too. I think we're going to shut down the meeting.
Go ahead, you can close the room.
Okay.
Close the room as well.
All right.
Okay.
Terrific.
I'm turning it all off, so go ahead.
Cool. All right.